An Osho Talk. When the Shoe Fits. Talks on the stories of Trunk Desert, number 9.
Trunk Desert told the story of Duke Huan and the wheelwright. Duke Huan of Qi, first in his dynasty, sat under his canopy reading his philosophy. Huan, the wheelwright, was out in the yard making a wheel. Huan laid aside his hammer and chisel, climbed the steps, and said to Duke Huan, "May I ask you, Lord, what is this you are reading?" The Duke said, "The experts, the authorities." Huan asked, "Alive or dead?" The Duke said, "Dead a long time." The wheelwright said, "Then you are reading the dirt they left behind." The Duke said, "What do you know about it? You are only a wheelwright. You had better give me a good explanation, or else you must die." The wheelwright said, "Let us look at the affair from my point of view. When I make wheels, if I go easy, they fall apart, and if I am too rough, they do not fit. But if I am neither too easy nor too violent, they come out right, and the work is just what I want it to be. You cannot put this into words. You have to know how it is. I cannot even tell my own son exactly how it is done, and my own son cannot learn it from me. So here I am, 70 years old, and still making wheels. The men of old, they took all they really knew with them to the grave. And so, Lord, what you are reading there is only the dirt they left behind them."
It happened on a backcountry road. A motorist found that something was wrong with his engine. He stopped the car, opened the hood, looked inside. Suddenly he heard a voice that, "If you ask me, I can tell you what is the trouble." Surprised, he looked around, because he thought there was nobody else there. And yes, there was nobody but a horse standing in a farm just nearby. The man got afraid and scared. Down the road, he sped. After 20 minutes, he reached a filling station. When he caught his breath, he told the man, the owner, that this has happened. There was nobody else but a horse. And I have heard a human voice that, "If you ask me, I can tell you what is the trouble." The owner said, "By any chance, was the horse black, sway-backed, bow-legged?" The man says, "Yes, that's right." Said the owner, "Don't mind him. He is just an old philosopher, dead long before, is still haunting the place. And just because of the old habit, he goes on seeking people to ask him. He does not know a thing about engine trouble. And he is not a horse. He is just using that poor old horse as a medium. So don't mind him. But this is how it happens on all the roads of life. The old ghosts go on hunting, and they know all the answers. You have just to ask, just for asking, they are ready to give you all answers. And life goes on changing, and they don't know a thing about engine trouble. Life goes on changing moment to moment. You cannot find the answer from the past, because nothing is the same today. You cannot find the answer in the past, because the answer is not the thing. It always dies with the man who has discovered it. But ghosts go on hunting. Your Vedas, Qurans, Bibles, Gitas, they are ghosts. They are not realities now. Long dead. But they have an appeal. So first try to understand the appeal. Why the dead has so much? Dead past has so much appeal over the living. And why the dead go on pulling your legs? Why you carry them? Why you listen to them? You are the living. You are the fresh. Why you look to the past, to the authorities and the experts? First thing. Longer a person has been dead, greater is the tradition. Time. And time hallows everything. If Buddha is alive, you can tolerate him. At the most, if you are very kind to him, you may go and listen to him. But you cannot believe that he is a Bhagwan. You cannot believe that this man has known the ultimate. Because he will look just like you. A man of blood and bones. Young or old. Ill or healthy. As prone as you to death. Just like you. Hungry, he needs food. Sleepy, he wants a bed. Ill, he has to rest. Just like you. Thirsty, he drinks the same water. Hungry, he eats the same bread. Just like you. How can you believe that he has known the ultimate, the deathless, difficult? Almost impossible. Even if you try, it never happens. Even if you force yourself, deep down the doubt remains. But now, 25 centuries passed, Buddha is no more a man of bones and blood. He never falls ill. He is never hungry, never needs food. Never needs any medicine. He will never die now. He is immortal. Time hollows, and by you forget that he belonged to you. By and by, the dead image becomes golden. It reaches higher and higher. It is completely lost somewhere in the paradise. You can have only a glimpse. Then you can believe. Hence, the past goes on haunting you. If he comes again, you will reject him. That's how Jesus is worshipped now, and he was crucified when he was alive. Alive you crucify him, dead you worship him. Why death makes him so meaningful, so significant? Death destroys the body. And then the link with you is broken. Then you have a spiritual image, bloodless, boneless, supraphysical. Now you imagine, and it is for you to give all the qualities to him. You project. It is difficult to project on a living man. Because the reality is there, and he will destroy all your projections, and he will not be ready to become a prisoner into your projections. But dead, what he can do? What Jesus can do? What Buddha can do? Helpless. Whatsoever you do, they have to suffer. That's why more imagination is possible with a dead master. And it is for you now to give the significance, the superiority, the otherworldliness. But with a living person it is impossible unless you have a heart of faith, total faith. And those who have a heart of total faith, for them Buddha is never the body. Alive or dead, he is never the body. They penetrate deep. Buddha is transparent. He may be in the body, but he is not the body. He may be living amongst you, but he does not belong to you. He is somewhere from the heart. That is the meaning of a Christ, the Son of God. That is the meaning of an avatar, a descendant of the divine. That is the meaning of a Tirthankara, a Buddha. He comes from the invisible, but that can be seen only through the eye of faith. The mind cannot look at it. But dead, the mind can project. So first thing, more the period, the gap, more the time between you, Buddha, Jesus, Mahavir, the more your imagination has a freedom. You can project. You can create a dream around them. Then they become more myths and less realities. Then a whole myth is created around them. Then you can worship. Then you can listen to them. But this is the trouble, that when a Buddha is alive, he can help you. When a Buddha is alive, you can imbibe his spirit. When a Buddha is alive, something is possible to be communicated, transferred. But when he is dead, it becomes more and more impossible. Why? Because that which is to be given cannot be given through language. If it can be given through language, then scriptures are there. The word of the Buddha is there. But it cannot be given through the word. The word is just an excuse. Buddha speaks to you, It is just an excuse to create a contact on the plane of the mind. And if you are receptive, something is constantly happening side by side, just between the words or between the lines. Buddha is reaching to you, and that is a living experience. He has to transfer not a theory but himself. He has to communicate not a hypothesis, a philosophy, but a living experience. And that is more like a skill and less like a philosophy. If you know how to swim, you cannot teach somebody just through words. What you will say and whatsoever you say, you will feel is not adequate. The only way is to take the disciple with you to the river. First show him how you swim. Give him confidence. Give him courage. Tell him, come, and if he trusts you, he will come with you. Then by and by, let him pass through the experience. Only experience can teach. And spirituality is just like swimming. You cannot say anything about it. You can describe it, but the description is dead. And it is a live experience. Something happens when somebody is there who knows the skill. He cannot say it to you, but you can learn. And this is the mystery. He cannot teach it to you, but you can learn if you are receptive. So remember, more depends on the disciple and his receptivity, less on the master. He is there. He is present. Now you have to be receptive and imbibe. You have to be receptive and allow. You have to be receptive and let him penetrate in you. If you are a friend, the whole being shrinks. You are closed. When you are closed, the master can go on knocking at your door. There will be no response. The more he knocks, the more you will shrink and become scared. So he will not even knock, because that too is aggression. He will simply wait on the door. Whenever you are ready and you open, he can give it to you. He can deliver it instantly. But the disciple has to be ready. And this possibility is there only with a living master. With a dead master, you cannot learn anything. The word is with you, the Bible is with you. You can become a great scholar, a philosopher. You can think and spin many theories around it. You can create a theology of your own. But Jesus will not be there. You have to live with Jesus. His presence is the most significant thing. Second thing to be remembered is, mind always likes theories, words, philosophies. It can tackle with them. It is a game the mind likes very much, because nothing is lost. On the contrary, mind is more strengthened through them. The more you know, the more information you gather, the more your mind feels, I am somebody. With a living master, this is the problem. You have to surrender. Your ego has to be dissolved. It is really a death experience to live with a master. You have to die. And unless you die, nothing is going to happen. Only through your death, rebirth will happen. When you are no more there, suddenly the divine is. So a living master is a death experience to the mind. A rebirth of the soul, but death of the ego. With dead masters, you are not scared. The mind can go on playing the game with the experts and the authorities. And the interpretation depends on you. Any theory, the meaning is not there in it. You have to put the meaning and read. It is a game. You think you are reading the Gita, the word of Krishna, you are wrong. The word is there, but who will put the meaning? You will put the meaning. So every scripture is nothing but a mirror. You will see your own face in it. And you can read anything that you like. And the mind is very cunning. It will simply not listen to anything that goes against. And it can interpret in its own ways. And Krishna is not there to say, no, this is not my meaning. It happened. Sigmund Freud was alive, but very old, just his last year of life. He gathered all his disciples and he had a big following all over the world. He has created a very significant school of psychoanalysis, and he was revered. 20, the nearmost disciples were taking their lunch with him. They started discussing about something, what Freud means. And they forgot completely that Freud is there. And they became so much absorbed in the discussion. They were contradicting each other, arguing with each other. One theory, 20 interpretations. And the master was alive. And he was sitting there. And they have forgotten him completely. And then he hammered the table and said, one thing please, I am still alive. You can ask me what do I mean. And listening to you, I have become aware what you are going to do when I am dead. I am alive. Nobody asks me what is my meaning. And you have 20 meanings already. When I am dead, you will have 200, 2000, 2 million meanings. And then there is no possibility to ask Freud what he means. That's how sects are born, creeds. Jesus was a simple man. But look at the Catholics and the Protestants and hundreds of sects of Christianity and their interpretations. Jesus was a simple man, the son of a carpenter. He never used the jargon of theology. He was not a man of words. He was a man of experience. He simply talked in his small stories, anecdotes, parables. And he was talking to illiterate people. His meaning is simple. But look, the Protestant, the Catholics, their theologians, and they have made so much out of him. A mountain. On simple things they go on discussing and arguing. And they get so much lost in it that Jesus is completely forgotten. When a living fried is forgotten, how can you remember a dead Jesus? Ask Hindus. They have 1,000 interpretations of Gita already. And every year, interpretations go on being added, new interpretations. And nobody agrees with anybody else. Shankara says that the message is of renunciation. Gita's message is of renunciation. Inaction. Lokman Tilak says the message is of action. Just the opposite. And Ramanuja says the message is of devotion, not action, not renunciation. And you go on, 1,000 interpretations, nobody agreeing with anybody else. And when you will read Gita, that will be the 1,001. Because that will be yours. You will bring your mind into it. Mind feels strengthened by knowledge, information. Mind is never in any danger. But in the presence of a living master, it is just on the verge to die. You escape Krishna's and you carry Gita's on your head. You escape Jesus and then the Bible. You always keep in your pocket. Bible can be kept in the pocket, not Jesus. Bible will belong to you. With Jesus, you will have to belong to Jesus. That's the difference. Bible you can own. Jesus you cannot own. You will have to be owned by Him. And thirdly, science can be written, there is no problem, because it is not an skill. It is theorizing. It is theoria. It can be written. It is description. It is not a mystery. Because the whole base of science is to demystify everything. It has principles, laws. They can be written. And if you can decipher the law, everything is known. Religion is not like science, it is more like art. It is symbolic, the first thing. It is not realistic, it is symbolic. Once it happened, a friend came to see Picasso. The friend was in military, in army. He looked into Picasso's studio and he said, "What nonsense. Everything is unreal. Not even a single painting represents reality." You cannot find anything like Picasso's painting in reality. It is not there. It is Picasso's feeling of the reality. Science tries to discover the objective. Art goes on trying to find the subjective in the objective. You look at a flower. If you ask the scientist, he will say the chemical compounds of the flowers. Of course they are there, but they are not the flowers, because they don't carry the beauty. They don't carry the meaning. For the beauty, you have to ask the artist. But then he will not talk about chemical compounds or anything else. He may give you a poetry. And that will be truer than any scientist can give. But that will not be objective. Picasso listened, because he was a soldier, this friend. And you cannot expect from a soldier to understand too much subjectivity. He lives in the world of objects. Later on, other things they talked, and then the soldier showed a picture of his girlfriend to Picasso. A small picture. Picasso started laughing and he said, "Is that girl so small?" It will be very difficult to make love to such a small girl. The soldier says, "What are you saying? This is just a picture." So Picasso said, "Picture is not objective. It is symbolic. It simply represents, indicates, shows. It is not a description. It is not exact in proportion. It is just an indication, a hint." Remember, religion is more like art than like science. And it is even more subtle than art, because art represents the objective and religion represents the subjective. Art has symbols to show the objective world. The art will paint a picture of rose, but the rose is there. The Van Gogh's rose or Picasso's rose may not be exactly as it is in the garden, but still it is a rose. You can have some similarity. You can find something which corresponds. But a Buddha talks about Nirvana. It is not in their outside world. You don't have anything to correspond with it. Jesus talks about the kingdom of God. It is not there in the objective world. Art represents the objective. The symbol is difficult, but still you can find something corresponding to it in the world. Religion symbolizes the subjective. You cannot find anything like it in the world. Unless you go within yourself, you will not be able to find the meaning, the significance. Then you will carry the word, and the word is not the reality. Then you may repeat the word God, and you don't know anything about God. It is more like an art, and even more like a craft. What a Buddha is doing, he is a craftsman. He makes gods out of you. Just like a sculpture. He goes on hammering on the stone, cutting this and that piece, throwing away all that is inessential, and then an image, by and by, is discovered. It was there. Before the artist started with his chisel and hammer, it was there. But the unessential was also there. The unessential has to be broken and thrown away, so the essential comes up and is discovered. What a Buddha is doing? You are like a stone. He will go on working with his chisel and hammer. He will cut the unessential, and then the essential comes in its total glory. then the magnificent is born. Then the other world penetrates into this world. He is not bringing anything new in the world. He is simply changing you, transforming you. You are already carrying the other world within you, but it is too much mixed with this world. A separation is needed. A separation of that which is essential from that which is not essential. A separation of that which is you from that which you possess. A separation of the possessor from the possession, of the spirit from the body, of the center from the circumference. It is like a skull. No painter can say to you how to paint. You have to live with the master. If you go to Picasso and say, how you paint, tell me something, some guidelines. He cannot give you any guidelines because he himself is not aware. It is such a tremendous phenomena. It is so unconscious. Then when Picasso is painting, he is not aware of any rules and regulations, any laws, any guidelines. He becomes his painting. He is no more there. He is completely absorbed in it. You have to be with him. When he moves into his painting, and when the painter is lost, and only the painting remains, when the painter is no more a conscious effort, when the unconscious takes over, you have to see that phenomena to feel it, what it is. Those hands are not of Picasso then. Then the unconscious Tao, the nature has taken over. Those hands are instrumental. They work as vehicles. Some other energy is there. See Picasso painting. He is no more a man. He is not at all a part of you. He has become the creator. He is not the creature. That's why when the painting is born, it brings something of the other world. But this is nothing. When a Buddha speaks, he is not the speaker. When a Buddha moves, he is not the walker. When a Buddha puts his hand on your head, he is not the hand. Tao, God you call it, or whatsoever the name you choose, has taken over. Now the hand is not of Buddha, it is instrumental. The God is touching you through him. And he is not there at all. Not standing between you and the God. But this has to be experienced. It is impossible to learn anything from a dead Buddha. And if you cannot learn from a living one, how can you expect to learn from a dead? It is a skill, the greatest skill, and so delicate and subtle that nothing can be done consciously. You have simply to be near and imbibe. The word has to be remembered, imbibe. A Buddha has to be imbibed, eaten. He becomes your blood and bone. He flows within you. Only then his presence has to be absorbed. And you have to carry that within you. This is the greatest skill in the world. To make a god out of a man. A man who is always prone to become an animal. To make a god out of him. To change the mind, to drop the ego and to allow the ultimate to happen in you, it is bringing ocean to the drop. It is dropping the ocean into the drop. It is the highest, supremest skill. No scriptures can carry it. They can only indicate. You have to be near a living Buddha to know what it means. And it happens only once in 1,000 years, 2,000 years, that a person like Buddha is there. And then dead cults are born. And then people go on worshipping without knowing what they are doing. Now, try to understand these words of Chantazu. It is a beautiful parable. Duke Havan and the wheelwright. Duke Havan of Qi, first in his dynasty, sat under his canopy reading his philosophy. Fien, the wheelwright, was out in the yard making a wheel. He is a craftsman. Fien laid aside his hammer and chisel, climbed the steps and said to Duke Havan, "May I ask, Lord, what is this you are reading?" The Duke said, "The experts, the authorities. Remember well that all your experts and authorities are always dead. Because by the time the news reaches to you, the person has disappeared. By the time you come to know that there is a Buddha, the Buddha is dead. Your consciousness is such a lazy and lousy affair. You are so unaware what is happening that by the time you come to know that the flower has flowered, you rush to the garden, but now the flower has disappeared. It takes time for you to realize that somebody is there. And it takes so much time. Sometimes centuries afterwards you come to feel that Buddha was there. But then nothing can be done. Be more alert. Be more conscious. So you catch the train in time. You have always been missing the train. You are not here for the first time. You were there when Gautama became Buddha. Somewhere on this earth you were there. It cannot be otherwise, because nothing dies. You missed him. Somebody must have told you, you must have argued. You must have said, "We have heard many stories, these are just the stories." You must have thought that, how can somebody else become enlightened when I have not become enlightened? How somebody else can be superior to me? And faith, you must have said, "I am a rational man and I cannot believe so easily." Doubt is there, and first I have to satisfy my doubt. It takes time, sometimes centuries. And even then the doubt is not satisfied. Remember, one has to take the jump, even with the doubt. If you wait, that first let the doubt subside, then the time will never come for you to take the jump. Because doubt is a self-creating process. One doubt creates another, another doubt creates another. And the same is faith. One faith creates another, another faith, then a chain is created. When you start, it is always in a wavering. Nobody can start with a total heart, because then there will be no need. One has to start with a doubt. But you don't pay much attention to the doubt, you pay much attention to trust. Then the energy moves in the trust, and trust becomes a chain. By and by, the energy from doubt is absorbed by the energy in trust. Remember, one has to sow the seeds. If you wait and you say, when doubt is no more, then I will sow the seeds of trust, then you will never sow the seeds. You must have heard, somebody must have told, that this Gautama has become enlightened. You must have laughed. You must have said, nobody becomes enlightened. These are just stories. People go on creating. And I know this Gautama. I know even his father. I know their family. And I cannot believe, because I am a skeptic. I am a rational man. Without reasoning, I cannot move a single step. And not only with Buddha, you were there when Jesus was there. You were there when Chuantasu was there. You have always been here. But you have missed many times. Why? The reason is the same always. You cannot trust. You go on finding arguments against taking the jump. An infinite possibility is there for you to go on finding again and again and again. Because once you feed doubt, it becomes a cancerous growth. Then it perpetuates itself. There is no need to help it. It is a cancerous growth. It goes on, and it grows. The same happens with trust. So remember, it is not a question that when there is no doubt, then you will trust. It is impossible. Then that time will never come. You have to trust while doubt is there. And look at the beauty. If you can trust while the doubt is there. And this is how human mind is frail, weak, divided. You have to trust while the doubt is there. And I tell you, if you trust while the doubt is there, that means you pay more attention to trust and less attention to doubt. You are indifferent to doubt. Your whole attention is towards trust. A day comes when the doubt has disappeared. Because if you don't give attention, you don't give food. Attention is food. If you don't give attention, the doubt cannot persist in its chain. But you always find reasons. The ego always says, don't surrender. Don't let go. What you are doing, you will be lost. And you never think that you are already lost where you are. You must have met a person who is known as an auto nut. There are persons who simply enjoy driving. They are auto nuts. They will go from Bombay to Delhi, and the first thing, non-stop, they will go. And the first thing, reaching Delhi, they will say, we made it in 24 hours. This is the auto nut. Once it happened, one auto nut was driving me somewhere. Fast he was going, with mad speed on the highway. And we were to reach a village, and we were not reaching, and we were to reach by the afternoon, and it was already evening. So I looked at the map and said to him that it seems you have taken a wrong route. He said, don't bother about the map. It does not matter. We are enjoying the ride. And he sped. He was going on. Even then he was not stopping to look at the map. There are people who simply go on moving fast, thinking as if just by moving fast they will reach somewhere. It is not movement that leads you somewhere. It is direction. It is not just by running that you will reach the destiny. You may be running in a circle. Where have you reached? What have you got to lose? Nothing whatsoever. Then why you are afraid? Afraid to lose nothing? People come to me and they say it is difficult to surrender. I always look at them and simply cannot understand what they are talking about, because they have nothing to surrender. Nothing to lose. Nothing to renounce. If you have attained something, then renunciation means something. You have not attained anything. Worthless rubbish you have gathered. And you think this is something. But you don't want to look at it. Because if you look, you become afraid. Then the ground underneath becomes sick. You don't look at it. You simply go on believing that I have much and you have nothing. Because except enlightenment, there is nothing worth saying that I have got it. Except a fully aware consciousness, a flame within of the deathless, there is no other riches. There cannot be. Fian laid aside his hammer and chisel, climbed the steps and said to Duke Hawan, may I ask, Lord, what is this you are reading? The Duke said, the experts, the authorities. And a person becomes an expert only when he has a long tradition. He becomes an authority only when much time has passed and many people have worshipped him. If nobody worships Jesus, will he be an expert or an authority? You count the followers. More the followers, greater the expert and the authority. In New Delhi, on a confectioner's shop, there is a sign, if you go, you must visit this shop. On the sign it is written, eat here, a million flies cannot be wrong. This is how you feel. When a million persons follow, million persons cannot be wrong, but these are flies. When 10 million people, then you feel that this is the authority. How many people are following Buddha? How many are following Jesus? You count the followers as if the master depends on the quantity of the followers. Religion is not politics. Following is not the question. Even if nobody follows a Buddha is a Buddha. And if the whole world follows, it makes no difference. Because people follow always for wrong reasons. Don't look for followers. But that's how you feel. Who is the authority? How many people follow? You always move through wrong arguments. Said the Duke, the experts, the authorities, Fian asked, alive or dead? That old Fian must have been a man of knowledge, a really wise man. Because it is difficult to find a person who believes in an alive authority. Because how can a person alive be your authority? It takes time, long time. Only then somebody becomes the authority. It happened, I was visiting a Buddhist Bihar, a monastery. And the inmates gathered and they asked me to say something about Buddha to them. And I told something. The head priest was a little uncomfortable. At the end he asked me, the story you told, I have never found in any scripture. And I have read all that Buddha has said. No authority quotes it. For the first time I have heard from where you have got it. So I told him I create stories. And if it is not written in your scripture, you can edit on my authority. Because how scriptures are created? Somebody wrote it 1,000 years before, then he is authority, and if I add a story, then no. But why? Just time. Because Buddha died after 500 years, stories were written, not in his time. So if after 500 years stories can be written, then why not after 2,500 years? He couldn't believe me that I can say this. This Fian must have been a very wise man. He said, alive or dead? Because authorities are almost always dead. And I tell you, if you can believe in a living authority, you will be transformed. Carry the dead. And they will make you dead. That's how you have become dull, insensitive. Be with the living and you will become more alive. Because whatsoever you do changes you. If you believe in the dead, you believe in death, not in life. If you believe in the living, you believe in life, not in death. The Duke said dead a long time. And really, every religion tries to prove that their atharthis are very, very old, extremely ancient. Ask Hindus, they say, our dharma is sanatana. It has no beginning. They are the most cunning. They say it has no beginning. So you cannot prove your religion more ancient than theirs. They have finished it. It has no beginning. They say Vedas are the most ancient. And they think if you can prove that Vedas are the more ancient, then they are more authoritative. Somehow, the mind thinks the older a thing is, the better. As if truth is a wine. Older, the better. And all interpretations are nothing but putting old wine in new bottles. Truth is not a wine. Truth is not at all like wine. It is just the opposite. The newer, the fresher. Younger, deeper. Alive, more profound. Dead, flat, dust left by the past, nothing else. But Hindus prove their Vedas are very, very old. And they go on pushing the date of the Vedas backwards. And they are very angry if somebody proves that they are not so old. They think you are irreligious. You have gone mad. Ask the Jains. They prove their Tirthankaras are older than Veda. And they have a point, because their first Tirthankara is mentioned in Rig Veda. So that is a clear proof. When the first Tirthankara is mentioned in the Rig Veda, and with respect, that shows he must have been dead already long before. Otherwise, how can you show such respect to a living person? With respect. Not just mentioned. Mentioned as a god. In Rig Veda, that means he must have been dead at least 5,000 years. Only then a man becomes a god. So Jains said their religion is the most ancient. And this is how all religions try. Why this effort to prove that you are the most ancient? Because the mind believes in death. The mind believes in past. Mind is nothing but past. So you think greater your mind will be if your authority is ancient. Because a greater gap of time, accumulation of tradition, a long stretch for the mind to move. Mind needs time to move. And mind is nothing but accumulated past. So you will have a bigger mind if your past is bigger. You will have a smaller mind if your past is not so big. That's why all the old traditions, countries, races, always look at Americans as childish, because they have no past. Just 300 years. It is a past, 300 years. It is nothing. Not only that, if you follow a master and he says he is 500 years old, his age is 500 years old, then you will collect more followers. I have heard that it was rumored about a Lama in Tibet that he is 1,000 years old. One Englishman visited him. He traveled from London just for this, because he was 1,000 years old. This is rare. He visited, but he couldn't believe, because the man looked not more than 50. So also he inquired, he asked his chief disciple, "Is it true that your master is 1,000 years old?" The disciple said, "I cannot say, because I am with him only for 300 years." But this is how. Older a thing, more authority. Even somebody says his guru is 150, suddenly you feel that something very valuable is there. Just by becoming old, you think something valuable happens. You can be 150 years old and just a 150-year-old fool. Because age cannot bring wisdom. It has no concern with it. On the contrary, children are more wise. Have to be. God cannot be wrong, because he always kills the old men and replaces them by children. That means he believes more in children than in old men. Old men means discard. Throw them out, they are of no use now. God believes in the new, and man believes in the old. God always believes in the new leaf, that's why old leaf is thrown. And he replaces it by the new, by the fresh, by the young. God is eternally young and new. And so is religion. But authorities, so you cannot believe in God's authority. Because if you look at the divine creativity all around, you will always see that he looks a little crazy. Because by the time a man has become wise, he withdraws him. You have become 90 years old, lived the life, passed all seasons, known much, gathered experience, and by the time you have become wise, he calls you, "Come on, go out of life." And he replaces by a small child. You are replaced by a small child who does not know anything. It seems he loves innocence more than knowledge. And he loves fresh leaves more than old pale leaves. And it should be so, because life has to be young. And if he is eternal life, he has to be eternally young. That's why Hindus never depict Krishna, Ram as old. That is symbolic. They are always young. Have you seen any picture of Ram, very old, or Krishna, with a staff in his hand, bent on it? But he lived 80 years, he was old. But Hindus have simply dropped the idea of depicting him as old, because if you look at God, he is always young. Just to show it that God is always young and religion is always fresh, just like an innocent babe, just like the morning dew, just like the first star in the night. But then God cannot be an authority. Authority means the weight of the past. Without the weight of the past, authority is not created. Alive or dead, Fien asked. The Duke said, "Dead a long time." The wheelwright said, "Then you are reading the dirt they left behind." Whenever you are too much engaged with the past, you are engaged with dirt. With graves. You are a grave digger. You live in a cemetery. You are no more part of the living phenomena that life is. The Duke said, "What do you know about it? You are only a wheelwright. You had better give me a good explanation, or else you must die." The Duke could not believe his own ears, that just an ordinary wheelwright would like to teach him wise things. People who are ready to learn are ready to learn from everywhere. This man is ready to learn from dead authorities, but not from a living wheelwright. And I tell you, a living wheelwright is better than a dead king. Because he is alive. Nobody is going to worship him. But God still trusts him. That's why he is alive. The Duke was very angry. He said, "You give me a better explanation, a good explanation, or else you must die." The wheelwright said, "Let us look at the affair from my point of view. When I make wheels, if I go easy, they fall apart. And if I am too rough, they do not fit. But if I am neither too easy nor too violent, they come out right and the work is what I want it to be. You cannot put this into words. You have to know how it is." The wheelwright said, "I don't know about authorities and experts. Let us look from my viewpoint. Yes, I am just a wheelwright. But I know my craft. And I have learned something from it. And that is this, that it is a skill. And so subtle and delicate that it cannot be put into words. If you move to the extremes, the wheel never comes out right. As it should. You have to remain just in the middle. And how you can put it in words? Ask a rope walker. How can he put it into words? How he walks on the rope, stretched between two hills out of a valley, where if he falls forever, he will be dead. How he walks on the rope. Can he put it in words? He will say, if I lean too much towards the right, immediately I have to bring balance and I have to move to the left, lean towards the left. If I lean too much to the left, again I have to lean towards the right, just in the opposite direction to bring balance. This can be written, but just reading it, don't stretch a rope and go on for a walk. You will never come back, because it is not a question of knowing intellectually. It is a question of feeling through your whole being. How much to lean? And there cannot be any fixed formula. It will depend on the person, the weight. And each person is different, the height. And the situation, the wind blowing. And it will depend on the inner mind. You will have to feel it. You cannot have a fixed formula and follow it. You will have to learn through a master. You cannot go to a college and learn it. In college, you can learn philosophy, you can learn mathematics, you can learn science, everything. But you cannot learn a skill. A skill is learnt only through a master who knows, and simply watching him, you start feeling him. And you have so much trust in him that if he moves to the right, your inner being also moves to the right. If he moves to the left, your inner being feels you move to the left. You become his shadow. And by you start. Set the wheel right, let us look at the affair from my point of view. When I make wheels, if I go easy, they fall apart. If I am too rough, they do not fit. But if I am neither too easy nor too violent, they come out right and the work is what I want it to be. You cannot put this into words. You have to know how it is. I cannot even tell my son exactly how it is done. And my own son cannot learn it from me. So here I am, 70 years old, and still making wheels. What he is saying one of the most profound truths, that there are things which can be learned only through your totality. Not just intellect will help. You can make a formula, but then you will miss. Because in every change situation, you will be carrying a dead formula. And it will not help. Because in every change situation, a change response is needed. That means only a consciousness will help, not knowledge. You have to carry a light within you. So in every situation, you can feel the situation that is here and now. And you need not fix the situation in a formula. Rather, on the contrary, you have to discover the formula every time there is a new situation. And life goes on moving. It never repeats itself. Even if it appears repeating, it never repeats itself. It cannot. And if you feel that it repeats, it is only because you cannot feel the new. You are so dead. Otherwise, it never repeats. A cloud that you have seen this morning will be never again in the sky. Cannot be. The sun that has risen this morning will not rise again. Because the whole universe will be different tomorrow morning. It is such a vast thing. And everything is changing. Everything goes on changing. Nothing is old ever, except human mind. That is the only old thing, the only museum in the world. Collection of fossils, the only graveyard. Otherwise, everything is new. Just look, drop the human mind. Can you find anything old in this world? Everything is changing, even the Himalayas. It goes on changing. They say it is rising. Every year 1 foot it rises up. It goes on changing. The oceans change, the earth changes, even the continents go on moving. Once it was that Africa was joined to India. Now scientists have discovered the fact, but the continents have moved so much. Once Sri Lanka must have been very, very near to India. Otherwise, the monkey Hanuman could not have jumped. It must have been a small river, just a current between two. And now scientists approve that continents move. They go on changing. Everything is changing. Nothing is static. Eddington is reported to have said that in his whole life he have come to understand that one human word is absolutely wrong, and that is rest, because there is no rest. Everything goes on moving. Nothing is in a state of rest. Nothing can be. Life is flux. If life is flux, then this wheel right is right. Because he says nothing can be said. With every wheel it is different. The wood is different. The cart is different. The situation is different. The road is different. One has to be conscious about it. I cannot put it into words. I cannot even teach my own son. And it is really difficult to teach to your own son. Have you ever heard that Buddha could teach his own son? Have you ever heard what happened to Chuang Tzu's own son? What happened to Lao Tzu's son? It is very difficult for a father to teach to his own son, because their egos are always antagonistic. It is very difficult, because a son is always in fight with the father. He wants to prove something that he is better than the father. He thinks that he is just an old fool. And the father cannot believe that the son can learn anything. He is just a son. And he remains a son. Even if the son is 70 and father is 90, he thinks that he is just a baby. It is very difficult to meet a meeting between a father and son. The bridge is impossible, almost impossible. This wheelwright says, even to my son, who is so near to me, I cannot teach. I cannot say what I mean. And so here I am, 70 years old and still making wheels. He is saying that it was time enough for me to retire. I am old enough now. The body is in tatters and I cannot work anymore. But what to do? Nobody has been able to learn the art. And I am still here, making wheels. Remember that only Sufis has used this story very beautifully, because they always teach through a craft. Only Sufis, they teach through a craft. The craft may be anything. The craft of a carpenter or a wheelwright. The craft of a painter, shoemaker, or anything whatsoever. Sufis teach through crafts. First you have to learn the craft from the master. And then he will teach you the innermost thing. Why? Because this seems absurd. For 10 years, the disciple learns how to make shoes. And then after 10 years or 12 years or even 20 years, when he has become a perfect master in making shoes, the master starts teaching him about the inner world. This seems to be sheer waste of time. It is not. Because Sufis say, the question is not what you learn, The subject matter is not the thing, but how to learn. Once you have learned how to learn, then the innermost keys can be given to you immediately. 10-20 years living with a master and learning how to make shoes. The disciple imbibes the spirit. The more he imbibes the spirit of the master, the more he becomes a perfect shoemaker. Spirituality is not touched at all, not talked about, just the learning to imbibe, and anything will do, whatsoever the master feels fit, or whatsoever he is skilled in. And by the time he feels now you can imbibe, you have imbibed the art, then he will teach you the inner world. Then he will bring you to the door of the temple. Then he will say, now I can hand over the keys. And if you cannot learn even shoemaking, how can you learn the divine? Sufis use it, and this we'll write is absolutely right in his standpoint. So I am here 70 years old and is still making wheels. Nobody has been able to learn me while I am alive. How can you learn from the authorities which are dead? And not even wheel making can be learned. How can you learn the supreme most art of life, the supreme most craft of bringing the divine to man, or bringing man to the divine? The men of old took all they really knew with them to the grave. And so, Lord, what you are reading there is only the dirt they left behind them. This is to be remembered, one of the most profound sentences. The men of old took all they really knew with them to the grave. When a Buddha dies, whatsoever he knew disappears with him. It has to be so. This is the way how things are. We may not wish it so, but our wishes are not the question. Whatsoever a Mahavira knows, when he dies, disappears from this world. No, it cannot be carried by scriptures. It cannot be carried by scholars. Words will be repeated and memorized, written, worshipped, but they are just dust, leftovers, dead things, graves. You can make temples out of them, beautiful temples, and worship, and go on worshipping. But whatsoever a Buddha knows disappears with him, because that knowledge is not separate from Buddha, it is his being. It is one with him. It is he. When he disappears, his consciousness goes into the infinite. The river has fallen into the ocean. Now you can go on worshipping the dry bed of the river, where the river once was, but it is no more there. You can make temples, pilgrimages, but it is of not much use. What this wheelwright is saying, he is saying, always seek a living master. Always seek the alive, because only the alive is here. Only life penetrates to the world of matter. And when a Buddha disappears, he simply disappears with all he knew. That's why Buddhas are always in a hurry to teach, always in a hurry to find one who can learn, to give. Because the moment they disappear, all they know will disappear. And it has to be discovered again and again. It is not like science. Science is the tradition. Religion is individual. If something is discovered by Newton, it will be there, written in the books, in the libraries. Einstein can be benefited by it. Really, without Newton, there cannot be any Einstein. He has to stand on Newton's shoulders. He may contradict Newton, but he stands on him. He is the base. Whatsoever Einstein discovers will remain a part of humanity, always. That's why science goes on growing, progressively accumulating more and more speed. But religion always disappears with the person who discovers. You cannot stand on Buddha's shoulders. No. There is no possibility. You will have to stand on your feet again and again and again. Religion has to be discovered again and again and again. It is an individual discovery. It cannot become a tradition. Difficult, but beautiful also. Because it cannot be borrowed. It is always fresh and young and new. It is just like love. Majnu and Leela loved. Siri and Faryad loved. Romeo and Juliet loved. But that you cannot stand on their shoulders and love more. Love cannot be an accumulative thing. When you fall in love, again, the whole thing has to be rediscovered. When you fall in love, it is almost as if no one loved before you. Whether anyone loved or not, it makes no difference. You love anew. The discovery is again new. Every lover enters into the temple of love. Fresh. No footprints are left of past lovers. Their love disappears with them. And it is good. Otherwise, even love will be just a tradition, a well-trodden path with maps. And when you walk on the path of love, when millions have walked, it is not worth walking. It becomes a super highway. A market thing, a commodity, then it is no more a temple. But when you love for the first time. It is not a repetition of anybody's love. It is you. God loves through you again for the first time. This is the paradox. I say again, for the first time. The mystery is revealed. This is how religion is, prayer is, meditation is. No, you cannot follow the dead. You can only be in the presence of the living ones. And you have to imbibe. And when you enter, this will be again for the first time. And it is good that when Buddha disappears, everything disappears with him. You have to find the path again. It is the eternal hide and seek game. God again goes on in hiding. You have to discover him again. Otherwise, Buddha has discovered, we can put a sign there, here lives God. Finished. Anybody who wants can go. No. He again is gone in hiding. And remember, he is a very skillful player. You will never find him in the old hide place again. He is hiding somewhere else. That's why old techniques become useless. New devices have to be discovered again and again. Because God hides in new places. He finds new caves. He always vacates the old. He says, now finished. This cave is finished. Now let worshippers worship here. I will not be here. enough for today?